This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And you're listening to the first 50 pages.
It was a dark and stormy morning. You run to your car through the rain to start your drive to work and open your favorite e-audiobook app for some rush hour listening. To your dismay, the audiobook you purchased has vanished from the library. After dinner, the rain still falls as you settle into your favorite chair with a cup of tea to finish the thrilling ebook you bought last week. And you discover it too has vanished from your e-reader's library. You search for the missing titles and find your ownership has expired and you must purchase them again, and the price has risen to $60. As a consumer, this has likely never happened to you. When you buy an ebook, you assume you'll own it forever, and the prices are roughly comparable to the price of print books. But publishers have different prices and rules for libraries, which determine how long we can own a copy. And now Macmillan Publishers is restricting libraries to one copy of all new titles for the first 8 weeks after publication. These policies imposed on libraries by publishers create challenges as we strive to purchase sufficient digital copies to minimize wait times and meet the increasing demand for these formats. We've invited Becky Heil, a district consultant from the State Library of Iowa, to chat with us about bridges, the Macmillan embargo, and how library users might be affected. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Becky, would you mind explaining, what bridges is for those listeners that may not know?
Sure. The easiest way to explain it is Bridges is really the ebook, audiobook, and streaming video buying consortium for Iowa Public Libraries. The State Library of Iowa facilitates the program, and then we manage the contract as well as the content on behalf of all the participating libraries. It's based on a platform called Overdrive, which some of your listeners may have actually heard of. They are actually a digital distributor of ebooks, audiobooks, music, and video. Libraries can't just go to Amazon and purchase those titles and make them available to their staff. So Overdrive acts as the entity that helps us provide that for our patrons. They provide the secure management of it. They manage the digital rights, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And then also the ability to download for publishers, for libraries, for schools, as well as for retailers. So the way we actually work Bridges is a library chooses to participate in this consortium, and then they pay an annual fee-based amount to the state library, and then that covers this platform fee that allows their patrons to check things out and search for things. It also covers all of the items that we purchase, and then we also purchase records that can go into public library catalogs.
Becky, do you know about how many libraries are part of the Bridges Consortium?
Yes. There are 434 libraries that participate. It actually also includes a few schools and a couple of AEAs. So that means that there's about 90-some public libraries that don't participate in this, but many of them actually have their own consortium, maybe a countywide one, or they're a large enough library that they can provide the collection on their own.
That's a lot of libraries, actually. I don't think people think, about the fact that there are that many libraries in Iowa sometimes. We tend to focus in our own little corners of the world, but can we talk a little bit, Becky, about why public libraries need consortiums for ebooks?
Sure. When I first started in public libraries and we were looking at trying to do ebooks and audiobooks, the company, which actually was Overdrive at the time, said, sure, we'd be happy to provide you with this technology, with the platform to be able to provide that for your patrons. But they wanted around $8,000 at the time just to provide the platform. That did not include any books along with it. It became really clear to public libraries that that was not sustainable. There was no way people could do it on their own. So when downloadable audiobooks started to become popular then, libraries really needed a way to get together and do that because it was cost prohibitive otherwise. Libraries in the northern part of the state formed a consortium called Neighbors, and that was actually just for audiobooks. It was really prior to the explosion of ebooks. when ebooks started to get popular, then the southern part of the state said, you know, we really need to get on the act. And so they formed their own consortium. Neighbors, the northern one, added ebooks to the collection. And so for a number of years, the systems operated independently. They had different collections. They had different policies. Then in 2017, the state library was actually able to merge both of those consortiums, and that single statewide service then became known as Bridges. So that's kind of how this consortium started. And again, like I said, the larger libraries are able to provide this on their own. But for most of those 400 and some libraries, it was simply cost prohibitive to do it by themselves.
And we do have a responsibility as libraries to use our tax dollars, you know, our budgets wisely. And I think Bridges is just a great example of how libraries are champions of resource sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Becky, how many ebooks or audiobooks do you think Bridges purchases each year?
It's changed year by year, but I was astounded. I was looking at some of the information over the weekend, and to kind of give you an idea of what the power of the consortium can do for us, this year we'll be spending $32,000 per month on content.
Wow.
For Bridges titles. Yeah. We divide that up into a number of categories. So of that $32,000 every month, about 30% of it goes to purchase books that are new to the collection. So maybe it's something that in the past, you know, a part of a series that we didn't have before that they were able to purchase. And it also includes all of those new titles that are coming out every month. We also set aside a significant portion of about, well, over 40% of that $32,000 is spent on purchasing multiple copies of titles. One of the other things that I discovered over the weekend as I was looking at statistics is we have 1.5 million potential customers. With those 400 and so libraries, we have that much population. So all of those people in all of those towns are able to access this content. About 20% of those 1.5 million people have cards. We have about 30,000 people who have cards. So we obviously need multiple copies. You know, with that many cardholders out there, you know, one copy is simply not going to be enough to do that. Our policy states that we will purchase up to 75 copies of a particular title, depending on how many people are waiting for it. So, like I said, 40% of that $32,000 is actually going to purchase those multiple copies. We also set aside money every month for items that patrons are asking for. On the Bridges website, there's a way that they can request and ask us to purchase a particular title, and we get a number of those every month. So we take a look at those and try to determine how many people are waiting for it and then buy those copies. Another big one that I think we'll probably get into a little bit later, we set aside money for what we call expiring content. And I think we can talk about that in a little bit. I've got a few other statistics here. These are just numbers that I just think are really, really interesting. The actual holdings that we have, this blew me away when I saw these numbers. We actually have 106,000 copies in the Bridges collection. So those 1.5 million people have access to 106,000 materials. We have about 81,000 ebooks. We have about 24,000 audiobooks. We have around 200 videos. And then we have subscriptions to magazines. The magazines were actually ordered last year, I guess, for the first time. The state library found some extra money, and we felt like we wanted to contribute to this Bridges collection. So we were able to purchase those magazines. And the nice thing about magazines is they're always available. And we've got all of the back issues from when we started. So 12 people can have checked out the September edition of, you know, People Magazine at the same time. So we really appreciate that.
And I think just in listening to some of the statistics, we can hear that as technology has improved, the demand for the e-formats has increased. It's something
Absolutely.
That our patrons across the state are asking us for, you know, expecting us to have access to as part of a public library.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think an interesting part to, you know, kind of bring up in the conversation of what the state library buys and stuff like that for Bridges, that there are these, you know, Bridges selector teams. I know I'm on one as part of a extension of the state library to help represent libraries across the state to, you know, purchase these different items. I think that mm-hmm. is kind of an interesting thing that people don't necessarily know, that they think it's, you know, yeah. all these people in one location that are buying for everybody.
Right. Yeah. And we do, our state staff right now manages the patron requests and the multiple copies and then that expiring content. But we do have 18 selectors all across the state who are currently working in a public library, and they're the ones who add the new books to the collection every month. And they swap out. They do 3-year terms, and they do a couple of months for each time. So we're really grateful that we've got people out there who are in touch with the public and can tell us what we need to purchase for their patrons as well as patrons across the state. Right now they're broken down into, we have youth services specialists who purchase the children's materials. We have specialists who work with adult nonfiction as well as specialists who work with adult fiction. And they buy both audiobook and ebooks for the collection.
And so earlier this year, Macmillan, who's one of the big 5 U.S. publishers, announced that they would be placing a buying embargo on public libraries. So basically, they're not going to allow public libraries or library consortiums to purchase more than 1 ebook copy of a new title for 8 weeks after its release. And I read that more than 16,000 public libraries / consortiums are being impacted. And so we know that our access will also be impacted by this embargo. But to be fair, I think Macmillan isn't the only publisher that kind of treats public libraries a bit like an adversary rather than an ally. You talked about like the repurchasing of titles, and I think a lot of people don't know that for the e-books, when they're much more expensive, and a lot of them have strict metered access that forces libraries to repurchase a title, like HarperCollins, I think it's after it's been checked out 26 times. And then other publishers like Simon & Schuster and Hachette require libraries to repurchase titles every 24 months. It's unfortunate we don't really ever own the access to a lot of this material that we are investing in.
That's exactly right, and that has been troubling libraries for a long time. Some of those restrictions were put in place almost 10 years ago, I just discovered, and it's been getting worse. I think that's the big piece, and you're right. It really has to do with a couple of things. One is that we don't own those titles. They're really technically leased. For a long time, we actually did own the audiobook titles. We did not have to purchase those, but several of the publishers are now going to that model as well with audiobooks. So we anticipate a day where we really don't own anything, and we do have to continually repurchase. So that's sort of the first piece of it. The second piece, as you mentioned, has to do with how expensive it is for libraries. I've got just a couple of examples. One of the new Stephen King titles called The Institute. If you go to Amazon or someplace to purchase that, it costs the regular consumer $14.99.
Sorry, is that for the print copy?
That's the ebook copy.
The ebook, okay.
It's $14.99, yep. For the library to purchase that ebook copy, it's $59.
Yeah.
To purchase the audiobook, again, the consumer can get that for $14.95. The library e-audiobook is $99. Where the Crawdads Sing, the Delia Owens, same thing. The consumer can get it for $15. The library ebook is $55. So libraries have been paying substantially more for their copies for a very long time. So the expiring piece really hits us twice, because we purchase it if it's popular and it goes out a number of times. Like you said, sometimes they're metered by number of months, sometimes by the number of uses. But at some point it expires, and then we have to make the decision, are we going to repurchase that or not? And I think most of the time, there's still a need for it.
Yeah, so especially like, you know, the Delia Owens book, Where the Crawdads Sing. That, I think, at least in our library, has been the most popular book of the year. It's had the longest mm-hmm. wait lists. All the formats have a wait list. it's hard to keep up with the demand because everyone is wanting to read this book to kind of find out what the buzz is. And I think you just illustrate a great example of that cost differential between what a consumer can get, but what a library is forced to pay.
And I think that's a hard thing for the public to understand because I think they assume, or, you know, I could be putting words in their mouth, but I think it would be understandable to assume that, you know, if they can get it for $15, they would expect that a library could too, or a very similar price point. But they don't realize that sometimes it's like triple the cost for us to get an item and make it available to our patrons.
Right. And that's actually one of the, I guess, kind of downsides of the consortium. I just found some information. Bridges purchased 50 ebook copies and 34 audio copies of Where the Crawdads Sing. It cost $5,000 for us to provide that for patrons across the state. But as those start to expire, we're going to have to be spending substantially more because, like you said, we actually have 1,000 patrons waiting to check out our ebook copy of that. So we're obviously going to have to purchase more copies as well as rebuy it once it hits that maximum. So it really hampers us as we're trying to provide the best service for patrons, really in a similar way that public libraries always have to make that decision. How many copies do you buy of a title to fulfill your patrons' needs? What's an amount of time that's adequate for people to wait for a title that they're looking for?
And even beyond the cost issue of this, I think the ALA makes a good point about how this embargo and these policies do impact literacy. And it's kind of why they're taking on this eBooks for All campaign, you know, why it is such a big deal. And they made some good points. One of them is, you know, we want more people reading. We don't want to create barriers that limit access. But it does, this policy does negatively impact people who rely most on libraries, because most of us just can't go out and buy a copy of every book that interests us. So patrons with physical disabilities or learning challenges are going to be affected. You know, with ebooks, you can adjust the font size and the type, which makes reading easier for people who have dyslexia or even are reluctant or struggling readers. And ebooks are light, so they're easier to hold. And as Alex told us earlier, it's hard for him to turn pages of physical books. One of our city councilmen is a quadriplegic. We interviewed him earlier on why he likes Libian, why he uses Libian. So that was to fill you in there.
Yeah.
And also, if we really think about it, I think the embargo will also punish new authors who benefit most from library marketing and promotion. We regularly feature and recommend books that are not bestsellers. And I think booksellers are also affected because we know people who go to libraries also buy books for themselves and gifts. The best customers at bookstores are often library users. The policy is really going to, you know, impact literacy overall, you know, that potential to really, I think, impact our library mission to increase literacy. We want more people reading.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. That's exactly why the American Library Association stepped in here. They've tried to work with publishers in the past and haven't gotten very far. And I think taking it to the general public with that eBooks for All petition is one way to get information out so that people do understand what this decision is going to mean for libraries across the country.
And I think how libraries are now struggling to respond to the embargo. And there have been a lot of op-eds, and I think on that eBooks for All website that the ALA has, there are a lot of op-eds that they have shared. And recently, the chief librarian of the Seattle Public Library responded by saying that they're not going to be purchasing new Macmillan titles in ebook format for the 8-week length of the embargo. And it was because he doesn't want to inflate demand that the library could not respond to. And I thought that's really a fair statement because, like you said, we do buy additional titles of things that are in demand. You know, we have how many holds on popular books, and how frustrating to be like the 800th person on hold for one book. I mean, we just can't respond to that. So I think all libraries and all consortiums are going to be struggling and really working to deal through the implications of this.
Yes, and I've talked with some of the Bridges team in the state, and I've talked to several other state libraries across the country about that issue and the whole idea of perhaps a boycott on Macmillan titles. And most people that I'm talking to have concluded that a boycott might actually backfire in that we're not purchasing that one copy as a library or as a consortium. And if people have to wait those 8 weeks or longer then because demand has built up, some people will have the wherewithal to go out and buy it themselves for $15. And so by not purchasing those, we've actually driven people to purchase extra copies. You know, we may have 15 people across the state who go out and purchase that, and we didn't purchase one. So we feel like a boycott may actually backfire in that way. So that's one reason a lot of libraries talked about boycotting but have concluded it's probably not going to make a significant impact. And then it goes back to what you just said about literacy, and that is we know that a number of our patrons don't have the ability to go out and purchase that, even at $15 a title. They depend on the library to have that for them. So to put them, you know, farther down the list in their ability to get at authors that they want to read really does a disservice to our patrons.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point because, you know, patrons, yeah, like they don't want to necessarily be, like Jen said, you know, the 800th person on the wait list, you know, but it's like the more we can inform them about potentially why there's such long lists, that it's not because we're not wanting to purchase these extra copies. So I think
exactly.
The more information we can get out there to them about that it's kind of not us, I think that that can be really helpful or make it a little bit more palatable. I mean, still, nobody wants to be number 800, but...
No.
And then
but
I would...
we can explain why.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the libraries are going to get a lot of that frustration mm-hmm. from the patrons
yes.
because they...
Yes.
You know, the patron sees that we're not responding to the demand, but really we can't in a lot
exactly.
of these circumstances.
You may notice on the Bridges website, we did add a little tag that says Macmillan publishers are limiting their ebook offerings to libraries. So at least those people who use that site to, you know, put their holds on or to search for titles will at least see that. And then we've got a link on the Bridges site to that eBooks for All petition so that they can get more information about the subject. And I believe I heard, I haven't been able to test it yet, but I believe that I heard that when someone puts a hold on a Macmillan title, they will actually get a note that says, unfortunately, due to publisher changes, we're unable to purchase this item at this time. So I believe there will be notices that go to the public when they're trying to put a hold on it.
That's nice. I haven't, I guess, checked anything out super recently, but that's nice to know that at least that little bit of information is going to be out there, whether people read it or not, you know, at least
right.
it kind of gives them a heads up.
And I think,
exactly.
too, like, I would love to tell somebody that's frustrated with the ebook hold list, like, come on into your library because we probably have a print copy that you can get mm-hmm. faster if you don't want to wait for the Macmillan title.
That would be nice.
Come in and check out the print copy.
Yeah, or come in and see us and we can offer you a recommendation in the meantime if it is, you know, one of those super popular ones where every single copy in every single format is, you know, checked out that, you know, maybe we can find something else that you can read or listen to in the meantime kind of fuels our RA recommendations.
Mm-hmm. That's what libraries are good at.
Yeah, it's what we love to do.
Well, Becky, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today about, you know, Bridges and the embargo. And, you know, I think it's an important thing for people to be aware of. And to kind of think about some of those things, you know, there's so much more behind the scenes, you know, for them when they're checking out their ebook. There's been a lot of evolution. Like you said, it started one way. And now with the improvements in technology, it is so easy. There's a lot of people that work to make it that easy for them.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you, Becky.
And you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we'll definitely all need to stay on top of what is happening with this. So thank you.
This is Kelsey.
And this is Jen.
And thank you for listening to the first 50 pages.